My name is Robin Perrin. Good morning, welcome, and thank you for coming this morning to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee, and we're putting on this service this morning. So I'd like to take a few moments this morning then to introduce our speaker and give a little bit of background about our service this morning and what we're considering here. As I mentioned, my name is Robin Perrin. I'm current chair of the Long Range Planning Committee. I do want to thank all of you for being here today as we continue our year-long exploration of our vision as a congregation and different types of ministerial relationships and how the two intersect. So in order to share a common understanding about different types of ministerial relationships, it's helpful to understand what we're talking about. Every religious organization has different terms that they use to refer to different relationships between a congregation and a ministerial or other religious leader. Within Unitarian Universalism, the three terms we'll focus on are contract, interim, and settled minister. A contract ministerial relationship occurs when a congregation, often specifically the board of a congregation, hires a professional minister for a set period of time. Oops. The contract... Got some interference here. The contract between the board and the minister spells out specific aspects of the relationship, such as the priorities with which the minister is to concern her or himself, the type and the amount of labor to be performed, the duration of the contract, and other types of parameters. So in short, the contract is a for-hire situation, and the minister is charged to focus on a list of specific tasks. And our current contract minister is Reverend Ralph Tysinski. A settled minister, on the other hand, is called or engaged by an entire congregation, not just the board, but the entire congregation, for an indefinite length of time. Settled ministers are said to be in relationship with a congregation as a whole, again, not just the board, and the relationship is more open-ended in both duration and in intellectual self-determination than is the case with contract ministry. An interim minister is exactly as it sounds. It's a minister who is serving with a congregation that has decided to make the transition from a contract ministry relationship to a settled ministry relationship, but has not yet completed the entire search process. So in order to further explain these concepts, a number of analogies have been drawn from different areas. For instance, if you draw an analogy from the world of real estate, a contract minister has been compared to a lease, whereas a settled minister has been compared to being more akin to that of a homeowner with a equity interest in the long-term future of a property. There have been other analogies comparing a contract minister to sort of an engagement, whereas a settled minister would be becoming married. I think another helpful analogy, especially in a university town like Madison, for those who are familiar with university governance and structure, comes from the world of academia, where a settled minister may be thought to be akin to that of the relationship of a tenured professor who's expected to use all of their training, experience, and creativity in concert with the resources available at the university to further educational and research goals. Some of those goals, they, of course, self-determine as to what the specifics of the goals are, as long as they are within the general aegis of the university. A contract minister, on the other hand, might be compared to an adjunct professor, someone who's hired to teach a particular class, perhaps for just one semester at a time, and may or may not have much determination about exactly how to teach that class or what to teach. If you'll indulge one more consideration of terminology before I introduce Ian Evison, I'd like to make note of the dictionary definition of minister, but not as a noun, instead as a verb. The Random House Dictionary specifies minister, as in to minister, verb, as in three ways. Number one, to perform the functions of a religious minister. Number two is to give service, care, or aid, to attend, as to wants or necessities. For example, to minister to the needs of the hungry. And number three, to contribute as to comfort our happiness. So in this manner, I think it's worth noting, as the saying goes, that actions, that is the verb to minister, speaks louder than words, perhaps nouns. With regard to the first definition, to perform the functions of a religious minister, Unitarian Universalism is a unique, broad, diverse, rich, and deep tradition. It's so broad, in fact, that I think we could spend a lot of time discussing whether Unitarian Universalism is a religion, an ethical tradition, or something else entirely. But what is perhaps less controversial are the second and third definitions I just read, which would be, to paraphrase, that ministry is a professional calling. It's motivated by a deep desire to provide service, care, or aid, and to contribute to a congregation and to society in a meaningful way. Unitarian Universalist ministers spend years studying their craft in both academic and real-world settings, and Ian could probably tell us more about this. Certainly a major, if not the major, Unitarian Universalist seminary is Meadville Lombard Theological School. If you look at some of the course offerings on their website that students are engaged in there, some of the titles might be what you might expect, such as a course on religious humanism, a course on world religions, a course on Unitarian Universalist history. Some of them might not be exactly what you would expect. A course entitled Problems in Public Ethics, one entitled Walking the Talk, Communicating Across Cultural Differences, and the very pragmatically named Feet for Dreams, Fundraising in a New Age. I think it's helpful to understand how ministers undergo training and what they focus on, because it gives some insight into the professional background of ministers, but only at a minimum. Because as you might expect, the diversity of ministerial perspectives within Unitarian Universalism is at least as broad as that of the Unitarian Universalist laity as a whole. So with that background, I'd like to introduce Reverend Ian Evison. Ian Evison is the Congregational Services Director for the Central Midwest District of the Unitarian Universalist Association. He writes in his biography that his passions on the professional side at the moment include how congregations can respond strategically to financial stress, and also the smart use of technology in congregations. His personal passions include gardening, woodworking, and cooking. He previously served as director of research at the Alban Institute, which is an independent nonprofit center of learning and leadership development with a focus on congregations located in Herndon, Virginia. While he was there, he also consulted with congregations and coordinated Alban's work on evaluation, as well as the Congregational Resource Guide team. Before coming to the Alban Institute, Ian Evison served as dean and interim president at Meadville Lombard Theological School. And prior to that, he was minister of the UU congregation at Niagara Falls, New York. He's earned both a PhD at the University of Chicago Divinity School and a Doctor of Ministry from Meadville Lombard Theological School. So although he is not a man to stand on formalities, I wonder if the proper way to introduce him is Dr. Reverend Ian. We are very pleased to have him here today from Chicago. Please join us in welcoming him.
Thank you, Robin. That was much more than an introduction. You know, those terms are clearer to me now than I really felt like taking notes. I think you really do have a future in something like making patent stuff clear. You know, some people, when they talk, you just feel like taking notes. And well, I don't know whether it's right to call what I have for you this morning a sermon. But I have the suspicion with this crowd that it's okay if I don't use that word. What I want to do this morning is open up my experience of ministry in a way that I hope is helpful to you. And what I mean by that is helpful in any decisions that you might want to make, but also helpful to you as a community, so that the discussions you go through in making these decisions deepen you both as individuals and as a community. For me and my family, I can say that I have had an incredible experience of ministry and ministers at their best moments. And at their moment, these best moments, that experience has been for me luminous, even life-changing. I can recall my first minister, Vincent Silliman, who was in the first generation of humanist ministers. He came from Wisconsin, actually, and he represents for me the first time I really was close to someone whose life was changed and shaped by a decision to live according to a principle. And for him, that principle was that nothing human would be alien to him. And through his life, that took him from lumber camps, and there were then lumber camps in Wisconsin, to being a social worker in Hudson, across the river from Minneapolis, which was then kind of the poor area down by the railroad tracks, and on to become minister in a number of congregations. And he also edited a number of our hymn books. Or I think very differently of the young woman who was my own minister last year. My wife and I are members of a very small congregation on the south side of Chicago, Beverly Unitarian Church. And this was her first ministry after graduating from divinity school. And she said, well, anybody who wanted to come and meet the new minister, they could sign up for some time. And so I did. And I went in, and with ministers, there's a certain tendency of them not to allow themselves to be ministered to sort of turn the conversation around to the other person. And she saw me doing this, and she said, no, this isn't the place for that. And something about the courage of that and her willingness as a young and, in a sense, rather, well, there was something presumptuous about it. But it was wonderful in the way that she had the courage to return me to my center. Or I think of the wife of my first minister, Vincent Silliman. Her name was Elizabeth. And that was, of course, the era before women were allowed to be ministers. So there were a lot of people who were ministers' wives who were really also serving as ministers. And it's after her that my daughter is named. I can remember when I was in a certain sort of youthful period when I thought being cynical was fashionable. And I can remember, my family and I then, my wife and, well, I think it was before my daughter was born, we visited her on the coast of Maine where her and her husband had had a cabin for many years. During World War II, they, in fact, built it of scrap lumber. And they had bought, or she had bought, a refrigerator. And I could clearly see that it was a pile of junk. And I could see that the appliance salesman had decided to take advantage of this elderly lady. And I was properly outraged at that. But she didn't want me to intervene on her behalf. She said, no, I'll phone him. And she phoned this guy, and she phoned him so full of conviction that he never could have meant to do something like that, that he came on his day off and brought her a new refrigerator. And it was experiences like that that opened for me whole new windows on how it was possible to live. But I don't this morning want to sell ministry to you as a commodity. And actually, I'm not very qualified to do that. In the first place, in my job, I spend the largest proportion of my time dealing with ministers and ministry that is decidedly not their best moments. Also, I have a decidedly research approach to things, and I know from a research point of view that there is no simple claim that can be made for what works in congregation. What people want is the promise from some authority that if you do X, this will work out. Well, it doesn't work that way. All right, I can tell you as a researcher that there is a very solid correlation between income and education. But I can tell you from my own life with two doctorates that it doesn't always work out that way. Finally, I don't want to sell ministry because I feel rather protective of ministers, especially of the younger new ones. And it's often they who are hired by a congregation such as you. Friday, I had the honor of being asked to speak to or participate in a conference at Meadville Theological School. And there was a panel there of the graduating ministers. And I thought as I sat there and heard these three young women speaking, Erin, Elaine, and Sarah, I think it was, that these young women were absolutely wonderful. And they would be impossible if they realized half how wonderful they were. And I feel a little bit like I do about my own daughter, about them and the subject of marriage. I accept the inevitability that they're going to go out and get jobs, but I feel a certain protective interest in where and how they do that. The ministers who've been at it a while, like Ralph and I, and we're roughly the same vintage, I think. We can stand a certain amount of being knocked around in ministry, shall we say. But I really have an interest in that next generation of ministers, that people not hire them who are deep in ambivalence about the M word. And I would also want those congregations to be able to love them into a sense of ministry that's greater than they themselves can see at the moment. And finally, that they would be willing to enter into a relationship with them where they would have more of a concern about how they would be changed than it's a fear of how the other would change them. So, turning this around from the point of view of the congregation, how does it look? I spend really a lot of my time with congregations at moments of decision, and have spent much of my career doing that with different types of organizations. The 10 years at the Alban Institute, I really had the honor of being with congregations of many different denominations when they were at points of transition. And it's really not possible at such a moment to give a group an answer to what they need to do. And one of the reasons that that's not possible is that when a group makes a really important decision, they're always subjects of practicality and identity woven together. The reason why marriage is so hard to enter into for many is it changes who you think you are. The M word is scary. And so you have to wrestle with the identity piece as much as you have to wrestle with the practicalities piece. If you look at it from each side, what I see is this. If you look at it from the point of view of the practicalities, there has over the last 15 years, 20 years, been quite a shift. Doing the work of a congregation is a lot of work. And there are a lot of places that have decided that they want help with that. Like one woman said, I now hire somebody to clean my gutters. That is a statement of my being somebody different, but it's time to do that. And I think part of this is the busyness of things. But there's also a sense in which ministry has become a far more technical subject. When I was in what was then called LRY, anybody remember? But yeah, oh, good. Well, our minister would pile us all in a station wagon and we'd go off to see a folk concert. Well, let's count the ways we can't do that anymore. You know, can't have, you know, a group without permission slips, you know, without seat belts, without whatever. It's become a much more technical thing. And, you know, I spent a couple days, a couple weeks ago with musicians on the subject of copyright. It's a very, you know, it just gets to be complicated in a way that it was not complicated 20 years ago. On the side of identity, again, there isn't anything simple. Two things are simultaneously true, and this is the difficult part. There was a time when a congregation could succeed by adopting for itself a generic identity of a denomination. This was the grand era of the First Methodist Church of X, the first, you know, Congregational Church of Y. Well, there was a way in which, in the period of growth after World War II, which was the largest era of church building the world has ever known, by the way, that you could succeed with a generic identity. But one thing that's become clear is that no longer works that way. It doesn't work that way for businesses anymore, either. I mean, it used to work very well for McDonald's. That, you know, the strength of it was you knew exactly what you were going to get. Well, that doesn't work as well as it used to. On the other hand, any work on identity is a very relative, fluid, and evolving sort of thing. I was in a workshop with Barb Park. There was a moment of recognition where when one of the people was talking, and she and I just looked at each other and knew what each other was thinking. Because now, this was a workshop on fundraising. First Unitarian Society has 17 full-time staff and 3 ministers. Okay, you'd think that they would be at a very different spot from you. But this new woman who had a fundraising position began to talk about the ambiguities of the relationship between her and that congregation and committee, which was exactly about the same kinds of things as the relative relationship and authority and initiative that you're working on now on the subject of ministry. And it's not chance that the two probably leading congregations of this area don't have in their names the word church. Fox Valley UU Fellowship and First Unitarian Society. They are working those same issues of identity. So the hopeful thing is, if you make one decision or another, it won't settle these questions. But I suppose that's also the depressing part. And I can tell you that this question of the sort of for fear of using one of those words, the spiritual traditions of this area of the country are sort of deep in the bone. I mean, my own relatives came from Philadelphia, and they pushed a Canastoga wagon roughly 1,000 miles to Western Illinois, in part because they wanted to get away from certain types of tradition. And so they were very much at home in the world that is here of granges and cooperatives and so on. And that's not going to go away. So whatever decisions you make, it will still leave those questions. Although one of the things that's hard about the idea of ministry, especially of making ministry permanent, is the word minister gets close to a family of other words that can be worrying. And so you really, it's right that you have to work out your feelings about the, sort of about that whole universe of them. And I realized that for me to come and step back this far from actually telling you what to do might be disappointing, and just commenting on the process. And if I can go beyond that, it's perhaps in this way. Now, as I get to be the parent of a 21-year-old daughter and begin much more to see, be able to see myself as my parents, you know, remember what my parents must have been thinking at the age, you know, I now am, and all those back and forth things are, Elizabeth and Vincent Silliman had incredible influence on me as ministers. And a thing I now realize is that this was indeed partly that they were amazing people, but it also was that I was ready to let them in a way, frankly, I wasn't ready to let my parents in at that time. And I feel this powerfully now with my own daughter, to see how her having her independence requires not letting me in certain ways. And I turn this to your situation this way, that in a way, the question of what kind of relationship, how close and how permanent, is a question of how far you're going to let someone in. And not so much to the organizational matters, but to your lives. You know, are you ready to let someone call you? It's one thing to let somebody to do this task or that task. But are you ready as a group to allow that person to be a one whose sort of role is to call you to the center of your being? Or to call you to open up different possibilities? Because ministers are very, very human people. And in some measure, of course, it depends upon their skills and wonderfulness, what they can accomplish. But it also depends very greatly on any particular group or person's willingness or readiness to let them in. And I hope that as you think about what kind of ministry that you want or need, that you think also about what kind you're ready for in this sense. And if you're ready, there are amazing ministers, and you know, I will be very interested in working with you and seeing what you do or decide. I don't have at all an interest in you making one decision rather than the other. In fact, I have a very great interest in your only making the decision that you are ready for. Thank you.